Welcome back to Early Departures.
Welcome back.
We're here for another week of vacation nightmares.
Yeah. And I'm going to kick us off today by talking about, it's not like a murdery, scary kind of nightmare, but it sounds like one of my personal nightmares. And it was very funny because just before we started recording, you were talking about the show Below Decks. And my story is, if you recall, a couple of episodes back, way in the beginning, I, in passing, mentioned the sex boat.
It's like a sex... No, not really, but okay, I've read about some weird shit on the sea, so...
Perfect.
And I've actually was thinking, I've been missing boat stories. I've got a boat story in the works.
Uh-huh.
I've actually got two ideas for them, but I was like, you know, we haven't really talked about boats lately.
Yeah, we got boats on the brain. And this one is particularly funny as to having just talked about Below Decks, because this story... Could everything you read about it, it could be the front runner of a reality show on a boat. So I think you might enjoy this story.
Is this a cruise?
It is not.
Okay. Because there is this cruise I was looking into for a while, not to go on said cruise.
Uh-huh.
But it was like, there's a couple stories about it being a party cruise. And it was just a horror. A horror show in my mind of what you'd have to deal with. It was like a frat party on the water.
Yeah.
But continue.
Well, I guarantee you, neither one of us would ever want to or be able to live through this boat trip, I'll say. So.
I don't like how you said neither of us will live through it.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know, I'd turn into one of those murder suicide deals, I think, by the end of it. But you'll see what I'm talking about. And I think you'll agree. So we're going to start way back in November of 1972, when a 47-year-old Mexican anthropologist named Santiago Genovese was on a flight from Monterrey, Mexico to Mexico City when his plane was hijacked.
Okay. That's like a really strong setup to a sex boat.
Right. How do you get from one to the other?
Could you imagine if your plane was hijacked and instead of being like, we're going to crash the plane or give us all your money, no, you must go onto our sex boat.
Yeah.
Is that where this is going?
We're taking you to Orgy Island, whether you like it or not.
And that would be a nightmare. I'd be very sad.
Yeah. No thanks. But yeah, don't worry, because the plane that was hijacked was taken to Cuba, where all the passengers were let off the plane and freed. So Santiago lived to tell the tale. Now, most people who survive a hijacking would be like, oh my God, that was horrible. I'm so lucky to be alive. And maybe I don't want to fly for a while or do any kind of risky endeavors just to chill out for a while and be safe.
I have a feeling not this guy, because he's about to go get on the sex boat.
Yeah. Santiago said he was, quote, lucky enough to be hijacked because the experience got him thinking about human aggression and what brings people to act out in violent ways. As an anthropologist by trade, Santiago was now enthralled with the idea of creating his own experiment in which he would essentially stack the cards against participants in order to create tension and push them toward aggression. So that sounds super fun, right? You definitely want to be a participant, right?
No, not at all, but it rings a bell for some other things that I've read about on the internet, so I'm here for it.
Okay.
I'm here for the story.
So...
There are people that like that kind of thing, though. Like, there is, like, a haunted house. I don't, it's not a haunted house. It's, like, I want to say it's in Kentucky or Ohio, but you have to sign this waiver, and they pretty much bring you to, like, the brink of breaking point.
Yeah. Psychological torture.
Yes, and people sign up for this.
Yeah. No, like, no way. No thank you. Ever. Not if you paid me a lot of money.
No, you could never pay me to do it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't volunteer to do it. I wouldn't want to win money to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand. It goes back to, like, the water slides. And I don't understand why people want this feeling. Like, I don't understand
why people don't want to just chill.
Yeah. Why can't you just be relaxed?
Why do you want your heart to beat so hard in your chest? I don't.
It's like you want to scar yourself, like, mentally forever.
Yeah.
It's like, you know what would really make life interesting? PTSD about this scary house situation I put myself into. I'm tortured.
It would be really fun if I just had nightmares every night for the rest of my life. That's what I'm aiming for.
Yeah, right? I'm really living now.
Yeah. Now I know I'm alive. Nope, no thanks. So Santiago had some big plans in store for 10 willing participants who signed up for his little experiment. The group, along with Santiago himself, would head out onto the open ocean in what essentially was a raft. I called it the sex boat earlier, but it was actually referred to as the sex raft by news articles at the time. The boat's actual name was the Acali, which in the Nahuatl language of the Aztecs means house on the water. The boat was just 40 feet by 24 feet, and the sleeping area was 14 feet by 14 feet. So not a lot of space for 11 people to sleep in.
Yeah, I can't even picture this. Because one, you say raft, and I'm like imagining just boards tied together with a sheet for a sail. But okay,
so it's the captain of the boat, the raft, she said it was like a sardine can. And if you can picture in your mind, a sardine can is, you know, kind of a square but rounded at the sides. Mm-hmm. It was like that. So there was no, you know, like on a normal boat, there's the front that's like an angled so you can like chop through the water.
Yeah, the bow.
Situation. The bow. This one was not. This one was a rectangle.
How did it even? So all it could do was float. Sense. It couldn't go anywhere. It just floated.
Yeah, it's just like they dropped a little tin sardine can in the open ocean and said, good luck. But it gets so much worse because you want to know what the bathroom situation was like.
Oh, well, at this point, I just assume it's probably a hole cut into the bottom somewhere.
So close, but actually somehow so much worse. There was a netted area hanging over the side of the boat right out in the open where everyone could just see you just hanging out with no pants on. And while you're doing your business.
Like, okay, so there's a net.
Yeah.
Okay, so I assume you can't squat because no. You're just on a... So like, do you just lie down and like hope your body releases? Okay.
No. Nope.
So do you just lie down and hope that your body just like lets go?
People would sit sort of facing inward to the boat, which is also awkward because then anybody who's walking by, you're just like, hey, Jim, how's it going? Yeah, I'm pooping. Like, it's totally bizarre. But yeah, you would definitely have to sit on. It was like, if you think of like a rigid sort of metal structure, like poles, and then you have a taut netting so that it's like taut enough that you walk on it, but the netting is like wide enough that all the poopies can go through it.
Yeah, I'm imagining a trampoline screen that has larger gaps.
Yeah, pretty much. And so the boat goes up and down so much. Like, you would not believe how much this boat bobs up and down in the ocean. And so
it's just like feces are coming back at you.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, the ocean is kind of wiping for you. Yeah,
I mean, do you even wipe? Because then where are you putting your tissue? In the ocean?
No, you don't. They said, like, the ocean just wipes your butt off for you. And
I guess it's like a bidet. Nature's bidet.
Yeah. But, you know, one of the participants said, her name was Faye, and she said she had seen sharks out there in the water. And so she knew they were out there, and she every time she got her period, she was so worried, and she would look and make sure there was no sharks around because she was so afraid that the sharks were going to be drawn in and just biting her butt while she was down there.
The image that just went into my brain and the things I just wondered, I don't even want to say out loud.
Yeah, it's not fun. We're all, you know, I prefer doing my business by myself with walls and doors. Soundproofing is great also.
Well, it's never in our hotel rooms.
But above all, I just don't want anybody to watch me while I'm doing it. I just feel like for all the young people with the wandering spirits, I just want to remind them before they agree to any big adventures, ask what the bathroom situation is like first. Don't You know, because they just showed up. They had no idea. They just showed up on the first day. They didn't know what the boat was going to look like. They didn't know each other, all these participants. They were just brand new.
Well, it is the 70s, right? It's like
1973. Yeah.
I imagine that's what they did. I mean, like, Woodstock was just a couple years before, and I'm sure everyone just...
I don't think they were, like, out in the open, though. I think you probably went and found a bush or something.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay. Bathroom is horrible.
Yeah, but all these uncomfortable details were by design, and Santiago wanted no privacy and no escape. On land, you could just walk away. Here, on this boat, you were stuck no matter what and wouldn't even have a private space to be alone for a minute. And in fact, one of the ladies, she said she would go to the bathroom net and she would turn to face the ocean instead of inward to the boat and sometimes just sit there and cry. She's like, me too, girl, me too.
I don't even want to ask what the food situation was like on this boat.
You know, it must have not been that bad because they never mention it in any of the articles or the documentary that I watched. They never mention anything about the food, so it must have been fine. Must have been not traumatic.
The poor girl. She says she goes out to the shit net to cry. Like,
it was the only place that you could even have somewhat of a semblance of being alone. But to make matters more complicated, the Akali was an unpowered craft with just a sail and a single rudder to steer by.
I knew there wasn't a motor. There couldn't be. Everything pointed to no engine.
Yeah, and there was also no safety boat or support boat, if you want to call it, that would accompany it like you generally expect today, you know, in case somebody was injured or sick or just wanted to leave the experiment. And in fact, they, you know, talked about if they were to recreate this whole situation, they legally would have to have support boats for, like, the well-being of everybody on board. Because the ocean is a dangerous place, even in an actual boat and not a tiny sardine raft. So on May 12, 1973, the raft and its passengers would begin their trip alone across the open ocean for 5,000 miles from Gran Canaria, which is just off the west coast of Morocco, to Cozumel, Mexico.
What?
During hurricane season.
Okay, I thought they just launched off of Florida and they were going to go to the Bahamas and back. No. I was not expecting you to tell me they launched off of the coast of Morocco.
Yeah.
To cross the ocean. Why did these people sign up?
You know, he put an ad out and said hundreds of people applied. So, I don't know, it was the 70s. What was going on back then?
They also, he probably didn't tell them what kind of boat it was going to be.
Well, he didn't tell a lot of people a lot of things, but we'll get into that a little bit later. Santiago was interested in research that suggested there was a connection between sex and violence in monkeys. And he believed that, quote, most conflicts are about sexual access to ovulating females. Blah. Going along with that idea, in his experiment, Santiago wanted to collect, quote, intimate data about group and sexual behavior, morale, hardship, and togetherness. He basically wanted to research violence to understand how to stop it. He thought his best bet would be to cobble together a super diverse group of people from all over the world who were all different races and religions, some who were single, some married, some parents, and one young male priest, because every sex boat needs a priest, of course.
Man, that poor priest doesn't know what he signed up for.
I think it's probably the last thing he thought he was signing up for.
Doing Hail Marys over the shit net.
Can you imagine? So I'll briefly just list out the general info about the participants here, starting with the women. There was Cervante, who was French and 32 years old. She was a scuba diver who was going to study pollution while on board. Rashida, Algerian and 23 years old, was going to study pollution as well. Mary was 36 years old and an American and was something of a navigator, but also fleeing her husband who'd tried to murder her. Right before. Faye, another American, was 23 years old and would act as the radio operator. Maria was 30 years old and a Swedish boat captain. And Edna was a 32-year-old Czech who had been practicing medicine in Israel. The male participants were Jose Maria, a 34-year-old Uruguayan, who was actually Santiago's former anthropology student, so he was there to kind of help with the research.
Okay.
Charles was another radio operator, 37 years old, from Cyprus. Bernardo was 29 years old, and he was our Angolan priest. And Eisuke, who was 29 years old, and was a Japanese cameraman. Everyone had their own job on the boat, but they would all take turns working in the kitchen and keeping watch at the helm. He put women in charge and gave men the menial tasks. He was interested in feminism and gender equality and wondered if there would be less violence or more if women were in positions of authority. Santiago thought, quote, maybe men will become more frustrated when women are in charge and try to take over power. So he's already trying to, like, start something brewing even before the trip has started.
Okay. I mean, it is the 70s.
Yeah.
Women were, their roles in the world were changing.
Yeah. With part of the experiment's funding coming from a Mexican TV station, the plan was to make a documentary series about the experiment. And throughout their journey, Santiago would keep the TV station up to date and would take lots of video footage and photos. A lot of articles I read about the raft made a lot of connections with how similar it is to reality TV and how this would have been such a huge reality TV show had the participants not been nude or topless so much of the time. So it was pretty much more like the pictures were ending up in the tabloids instead of any kind of serious research journals or anything like that. And not more like on the tabloid news instead of the serious news, you know?
Yeah. Was he disappointed by that?
He was very disappointed. A lot. Anyway, so it's May 12th, 1973, and the raft heads out to start its voyage of discovery. They weren't allowed to bring any entertainment with them, like books and whatever else was considered entertainment in 1973. Their only entertainment on board is to talk to each other, tell stories, and sing songs. So definitely, again, my nightmare.
God, it sounds awful.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I would invoke violence on someone when they told me I couldn't read my book and I had to sing songs with them.
Yeah. And can you imagine, like, you know, you think about going out on a boat out on the ocean, but with nothing to do. It's not like you're going on a fishing boat where you're going to have to work all day, and you're not going on a cruise where there's entertainment. It's like you're just going on a little tin sardine can where you're just going to bob up and down on the water for however long it takes to cross the Atlantic.
No, I'd go insane.
So believe it or not, with the net toilet and everything, they were actually pretty much just chilling for the first 3 weeks. This is oddly specific, but I guess Santiago was recording everything, as this is supposed to be a legitimate experiment and all. But apparently day 22 was when everyone collectively was like, oh my God, I'm so bored.
Mm-hmm.
Naturally, by week 4, everyone was getting it on. Even the participants who had spouses or partners back home. Participants didn't know that it was actually Santiago's hope that everyone would start boning because of that link he'd made in the monkeys about sex and violence. He wanted to recreate that environment to see if it would be the same for humans. He expected that eventually the party would be over when people started getting jealous and competitive for sex. In fact, Santiago had chosen female participants with an eye on how attractive they were. The men, not so much. Shocking, I know.
Gosh, women always getting the short end of the stick.
Yeah. He also tried to force participants together sometimes when they weren't naturally attracted to each other, just to try to amp up the drama. Faye, who was an American Black woman, said Santiago told her one day that, quote, I should have sexual relationship with Bernardo because we're both Black. It was racist. And she really did feel like he was racist. In the documentary, they go into it more, where one of the other participants is like, no, he wasn't racist. And she's like, did he ask you to sleep with Bernardo? Did he ask you to sleep with all the, you know, white girls? Yeah. He's like, did he ask any of you to sleep with Bernardo? And they're like, no.
I mean, I don't know. I think I'm losing faith in this guy's, like, scientific credibility, to be honest. This seems more like his pet project that he's getting off on and not a real scientific.
Something he just thought would be really cool. Like something he had a dream about and he was like, you know what? I'm going to do it.
Yeah. I mean, him essentially by putting himself in the middle and suggesting she has sex with someone is taking out the natural reactions of whatever's going to happen. He's provoking it or trying to encourage it, which means study is now false.
Yeah. And I have to, honestly, the whole time I was researching this, I was thinking, I really wonder if it wasn't that he was on a hijacked plane and like, oh, wow, that was so great because now I got this idea for an experiment. What if he was on a hijacked plane and this was like his PTSD playing out, you know, like he just went a little bit off the rails. Like you might expect somebody to after a traumatic experience. I don't know.
Well, it's like someone held him captive and took away his control.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, so why don't I do that to someone else now?
Yeah. Santiago also set up the sleeping arrangements so that the mattresses were set up like boy, girl, boy, girl. And he knew what he was doing. Except it was so cramped and public in there that most people just got down while on watch together, literally while keeping one hand on the steering wheel. Surprisingly, Santiago was somehow upset that what he called the Peace Project was being called the Sex Raft by the media.
How is he calling it the Peace Raft? His whole point was that it was going to incite violence.
Well, because he wanted to incite violence so he could figure out what causes it and then how to fix it. Yeah. She's rolling her eyes. You can't see it, but it's happening. And yeah, eye rolling is a perfect response to everything that Santiago does.
I feel like there's a lot more. Like, we're only in like week four.
Oh, yeah. Santiago was pretty annoyed that things were not going according to his plan. Instead of having tension, conflict, and jealousy, the group was really just kind of bored, but working well together. He was like, no, 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 this won't do at all. How can I stir this pot?
See, exactly. Failed science, mm-hmm. failed research.
Yeah, it's just like a reality show.
It is a reality show. He's just like the new, he's like the, you know, the producer, essentially.
Mm-hmm. He's like, what artificial wrench can I throw into the works to ruin everybody's happiness?
Mm-hmm.
So he had at some point asked participants questions confidentially, you know, like as if he was conducting a legitimate experiment or something. And he asked them stuff like, if you had the choice, who would you sleep with here? Or who would you kick out of the experiment? Oh, and how often do you pleasure yourself? Then, in a move that was much more reality show than scientific experiment, he just goes ahead and reads out everyone's answers, along with their names of who said them. To give you an idea of the level of cringe happening, Santiago read out to the group that Edna had said she wanted to have sex with Jose Marie, but Jose Marie said he thought Edna was the most annoying woman he had ever met.
Oh, Lord. Man, is someone going to get pushed off this boat?
Maybe. Santiago also does obnoxious stuff like randomly throwing buckets of water on people. So just a really uncool guy all around that everybody was getting really sick of.
He's going to get violence. The violence is going to be directed at him soon.
Yeah.
You throw a bucket of water. I can't bring a book and you throw a bucket of water on me?
Yeah, and he was doing it to see how far he could push people before they would snap at him. Which is very... a very brave thing to do when you're out on the open ocean with no support boat to say what happened if you don't show up to the port at the other side.
Yeah.
But it all wasn't fun and games and hating Santiago. They also ran into actual problems like sharks in the water, a toothache, and Santiago's own development of appendicitis. There was also an incident in which there was a small repair needed on the outside of the boat just under the waterline. Though he had put the women in charge for a reason, Santiago was basically like, step aside, ladies, I'll fix it. Even though Cervantes was a scuba diver and all the women there were pretty badass anyway. So he goes to fix it, but water is coming into his mask because his beard is sort of, you know, making a gap. And he's just flailing around and trying not to drown. And ultimately, he fails to fix the thing and gives up for the night. But he still won't let the women even try to fix it. Because he is just level 10 jackass at this point. So they just waited until he fell asleep, and they went and fixed it very easily. So apparently he was super pissed about that, probably embarrassed that some girls could do something so easily that he struggled so hard to do and couldn't.
He's failing in his own research project.
He's failing on every front.
He's like making himself mad by the assumptions he made.
Yeah.
Maybe this is really a research project about him.
Yeah. At one point, a storm was forming, and the captain, Maria, said she was not willing to take the boat into the storm and wanted to pull into a port to wait it out. Santiago was secretly excited about it because he thought the danger would create more drama and tension, just like a reality show. So he's like, Maria, you are the worst. Why are you trying to ruin my experiment? I will do it myself. And he took over the position of captain.
If I was her and I was an experienced boat captain, I would tell everyone else on the boat, put them on the poop net. I'm taking over. We're going into port. Like,
yeah.
You have what, 13 individuals? So overpower him and be like, no.
Yeah, well, it's 10 plus him. So, but yeah, 10 against 1. let's go. Like, duh.
Yeah.
And, you know, this is an actual, Maria is an actual captain. She went to a maritime school, university, whatever. And she's the actual captain of this actual boat. And he is committing mutiny right now. And the punishment for mutiny is death. So he absolutely didn't know anything. It's it just goes to show how little he knew, that he didn't even respect her as being an actual captain at all. And if she was a man, he probably would not have taken over.
No, I think he would have taken over, because then it's someone still going against his plan of,
yeah,
I don't know, trying to kill everyone. Like, yeah. This is insane. You're going to drive us into a storm.
What's crazy is it's not like he has his own separate boat that he's just going to, like, you know, lifeboat it off the side while they go into the storm and die. It's like he's going to go down with the ship. Just to make a good story that he's not even going to get to enjoy if he's dead. Like, it just makes no sense all around.
Yeah.
But they were so lucky because the storm changed courses and missed them. A little while after that, though, a massive container ship appeared almost out of nowhere and was on course to ram right into their tiny raft. And Santiago basically freaked the hell out while Maria stayed calm, shot some flares, and managed to avoid disaster. So by that point, everyone on board was like, okay, is it just me or does Santiago suck a lot?
I'm glad everyone's starting to notice.
They said, what if he accidentally fell overboard?
Finally, yes. Throw him overboard.
Uh-huh. Look at how well his experiment is showing how you can create aggression and tension. Except for it was all at him, not at each other. And that's probably what happens when you insert yourself into your own experiment.
Yeah, and try to endanger people.
Yeah.
It'd be one thing if he was like, okay, no entertainment. You guys have to, like, fend for yourselves and blah, 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 isolation. Watch how it happens. Watch how relationships form. But he's literally making things worse.
Yeah.
Putting them in danger.
Yeah. That's what I think. Like, imagine you're just like, you don't know all these people, but you're somehow managing to, like, keep it chill and just hang out and just talk and sing and whatever all day and passing the time on this crazy ocean that is dangerous anyway. And then there's this guy who's just constantly coming out and throwing buckets of water on you and, like, pushing people to do things. And
I feel like you don't need research to figure this out.
Yeah.
If I was walking down the street right now and someone threw a bucket of water on me, I would be upset.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, like, he's stupid. This, like, I don't know what point he's trying to prove. When you do mean things to people get upset.
Yeah.
This is not a scientific research project.
Duh.
Gosh. Of course, this is being funded by a television company.
Partially funded.
Well, you probably don't need much money to run a tin can into the ocean.
Yeah. Oh, they were probably very excited about what they were going to get, but then probably very upset that they couldn't use any of the footage because everybody was naked.
Why aren't they wearing clothes?
Well, they weren't naked all the time. It was just, you know, I don't know, it's the 70s. It's like, there's lots of pictures of them just hanging out, getting sun on their bare buns, hanging out.
I don't want sunburnt nipples.
I know. Did they even have sunscreen back then? I don't think so.
Like, that is sensitive skin.
Yeah. Faye, the American radio operator, said one idea that they had was that they could take medicine from the, you know, Edna, the doctor's medical supply stash, and put it all in a syringe, and then everyone would put their hands on it and, quote, plunge it into him so that everybody was guilty. We would wrap him in a sheet, carry him over to the railing, and drop him together.
I mean, that's a wild pack to make with 10 people.
Yeah.
10 strangers, you know?
Yeah. And, I mean, clearly, at this point, they all hate Santiago so much that they are all thinking about different ways that they could kill him.
Wait, is his former student in on this?
You know, I'm not sure.
Because I'd be like, I don't really trust him. He'll probably videotape it.
Yeah, yeah, he'll tell on us. But she said, Faye said, quote, the idea lit like a match. We all thought it all at the same time. Should we do it? Murder? And she, on the documentary, talks about how she was actually starting to get worried because she was like, I can see this building. Like, right now, we're just thinking about it. We're just, like, talking about it. But it's rising. It's building.
I mean, do they know they could probably just, like, tie him up and put him...
I mean, they could legit just throw him overboard.
Well, I just meant if you didn't want to kill someone, you could just tie him up, throw him in the bottom, and be like, okay, now we're going to port, and we're all going to get the fuck off this boat and be done with this.
Yeah. I wonder if there were handcuffs or some kind of... Well, it's a sex boat.
They're probably fuzzy handcuffs.
Leopard print.
Yes.
So, probably sensing how much everybody disliked him at this point, Santiago basically spent the remainder of the voyage alone, below deck, and crying. He said it was the first time he cried since he was a boy. The crew were relieved to finally have peace on board. It's clear that he at least had some self-awareness and wasn't a completely egotistical narcissist, because he wrote of his experiment, quote, "Only one has shown any kind of aggression, and that is me, a man trying to control everyone, including himself." So he wasn't just laying down there pouting, he knew that he messed up, and he was very depressed about it, apparently. Luckily, those murderous thoughts the crew had were more like entertainment for frustrated minds and never had any real intent, so Santiago would indeed make it back to dry land alive. Amazingly, really, really amazingly, the miracle that the Akali made it to Cozumel on August 20th, 1973, after 101 days floating around in the ocean.
Gosh, that's a long time.
It's incredible that they didn't die. You know, it really is.
It's incredible they didn't throw him over.
Yeah, that too. And by then, Santiago's university and all of his colleagues at his university where he had worked for 20 years put out a statement saying they had cut ties with him and they had nothing to do with his experiment and didn't condone any of it at all. So, of course, that was very demoralizing to him.
I mean, I'm not surprised. Good for them.
Yeah. I mean, it got so out of hand. But he should have known from the start that it was, like, too much of an uncontrolled environment, and that he should have committed from the get-go not to insert himself at all. He should have been, like, you know, Jane Goodall with the monkeys and just observed and not actually...
Exactly. He should have stayed out of it. He should have sat in the corner with his little video camera and his notes and just watched it happen and, like, on reality television, do interviews with the group every now and then and be like, how are you feeling?
Yeah.
What's going on the boat today?
Yeah.
Not dumping buckets of water on him.
Yeah.
Like an asshole.
Yeah, it's so insane. But the funny thing was that though Santiago was trying to create a really difficult atmosphere, and living on a tiny raft floating around the ocean is inherently dangerous in and of itself, at the end of those 3 months, Cervantes said, quote, "I could have gone another 3.
No.
Clearly, Santiago's experiment was a failure, and he didn't get anyone to be aggressive, but rather sort of showed people how people will band together against an irritating factor because they prefer the ease of peace over the difficulty of tension. In 2019, a documentary called The Raft was released, in which 7 of the original 11 participants, 6 women and 1 man, reunite to talk about their experiences. It's a really interesting film, and I highly recommend everybody check it out because it goes way more in depth than what I've said here. And I think you can watch it on Amazon Prime.
I mean, I got to see what this boat looks like, so I'll be checking it out when we hang up.
And in fact, the director has a replica built. They have plenty of footage of the actual boat, but he has a replica built so that he's taking like these participants on this mock-up, and they're showing like, this is where I slept, that's where I slept, here's where the toilet was. Like, they thoroughly explain the toilet situation. And there is actually video that they show in the documentary of, like, how that all worked. So, check it out. And I'll end the story with the director of the film's words, which I think perfectly sum up the outcome of Santiago's experiment. Marcus Lindin said, quote, "It was too lame of a result in his mind that peace established itself on board. He had this idea of wanting to try out this kind of feminist approach with the women in charge. And ironically enough, he was the one who really couldn't deal with powerful women."
Yeah, I think I said that earlier. Like, this, he was his own research project.
Yeah, he was. I think he thought he knew who he was, and he found out who he really was on this 101-day voyage.
He taught himself a lesson.
So that's all I have about the sex raft. And everybody should go watch that documentary. It truly is very interesting and awesome.
Okay, so, well...
Are you going to take me to dry land?
I am going to take you to dry land, but it involves some wet conditions.
Oh, okay. Perfect.
Okay, so this is a more recent story. This takes place in 2019.
Cool.
So August 2019, Martin planned an amazing two-week vacation for his three sons, ranged from age 14 to age 19. Their mother, Martin's wife, suffered from MS, so she was not able to travel with them, so this was going to be a boys' trip.
Mm-hmm.
The father and the sons flew to St. Lucia for an island getaway.
Cool. I've always wanted to go there.
I've always wanted to go there, too, especially because of all the mountains that are there.
Yeah, you know what? Because to me, it looks way less Caribbean and way more like Polynesian. It's crazy.
Yeah. Mm.
Okay, deal. We're going.
Yeah, it's on the list, and it's still on the list after this. This won't change my opinion about going. So
cool.
Halfway through the trip, the family decided to rent a car so they could explore more of the island. They were just a few days from flying back home and planned a full day of activities. They planned on visiting a bird reserve at the national park and going to a rum distillery. And honestly, this sounds like our picture perfect day.
They got the birds for you. They got the rum for me.
I know.
So, you should have gone there yesterday. What's happening?
We're definitely going.
St. Lucia, I love you.
Yeah. I'm into their whole itinerary.
Yeah.
After visiting the rum distillery, the family continued driving towards the national park to check out the birds. They weren't sure they were headed in the right direction, so they stopped and asked someone for directions and were told to follow the signs for John Compton Dam.
Hmm.
As they continued driving and found the road entering the dam, they were still a little unsure if they were headed in the right direction. They spotted a few men sitting on a pickup truck in what the boys called workman clothing and asked for further directions. So I believe that they were either employees of the dam or men that were doing construction on the dam, but people that were aware of the area.
Sure.
Martin drove a little further before the road became steep and full of potholes, so he suggested that they park the car and walk the rest of the way to the top of the dam.
Hmm. Suspicious.
The boys mentioned that it had been raining on and off throughout the day, but they didn't mind because it was warm. And as you know, growing up in Hawaii and me living in Florida at some point, when it rains on these really hot days, sometimes it's actually really nice.
Yeah. Comes and goes.
Yep. So the family continued up the hill, passing another set of workers, but didn't talk to them as they passed by. Once they reached the top wall of the dam, they walked up a set of metal stairs before reaching the top. It started to rain a little more heavily at this point, so they decided to stand under a wooden hut nearby to get out of the rain. It was at this point their dad had used the bathroom. So Martin went around the corner of the hut to pee.
No poop net there, huh?
No poop net here, but it's much worse and the poop net.
Oh, okay.
Not good.
Uh-oh.
At this point, the boys heard their father yell and swear.
Uh-oh.
I know. They look around the side of the hut and saw their father face down in the dirt.
Oh, no.
I know. Poor guy. His eldest son, Lucian, called out to his father but got no response. So he reached down to grab his dad to try to help him up to figure out what was going on. And that's when Lucian felt a spasm running up his arm.
Ooh.
He had no idea his dad had been electrocuted.
Oh my God.
So when Lucian grabbed onto him, he also started to receive the electric shock.
Oh my God. Oh, that is not at all. I thought he was like going to get bit by a snake or something crazy like that. Oh my God. Oh.
I know. And it's so unexpected. It's like one of those things you don't know you should be afraid of.
Yeah, you would never think about it. Unless you saw like a live wire hanging out, you would never think of that.
Yeah. And
oh my God.
That's kind of how it generally happens. Actually, being electrocuted on vacation is actually pretty common, unfortunately. I came to find out when I was researching this.
Perfect.
So.
Perfect. I just got a new fear for my fear suitcase. Pack it down deep.
Pack it down deep. Yes.
I'm going to have to get those space saver bags. Damn.
Lucian, again, I don't know if I mentioned, he's the oldest son. Mm-hmm. He fought to turn over his dad. And when he did, he said Martin was pale and his eyes were rolling to the back of his head.
Oh, boy.
I know. And awful to see this happen to your dad.
Yeah. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah. You don't ever want to see something like this happen to your parent. And I'm sure in the moment, they had no idea that he was being electrocuted.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I mean, imagine somebody was just laying there and you touch him and now you're getting electrocuted. That's insane.
Yeah.
If you're ever on the ground, I'm just going to kick you.
Your foot's still going to touch me. I guess if you have rubber shoes on, you're good, though.
Yeah. I'm going to kick you with the soles of my sandals.
So, one of the other boys ran down the hill where they passed the workers to find help, but at this point, no one had any cell phone service.
Oh, God. Of course not. Why would they?
Right? There's never any cell phone service in these stories.
Wouldn't be a nightmare if they had.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, I'm not sure if the boys were even aware of what happened at this point, but Martin apparently touched a metal pipe on or near the building as he walked to the side to use the bathroom. That metal pipe was live from some electrical wiring.
Oh, dang. Well, okay. So at least that answers my question in my head that I had of, like, were his pants down around his ankles? Because that would be really sad.
Well, so. And when I first read this, I thought maybe he urinated on a live wire.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Because that can happen.
So many ways to go.
Lucian said it took the Royal St. Lucia police force between an hour and a half to 2 hours for them to arrive. Mm. Adding that when they did finally arrive, they were laughing and joking amongst themselves.
Oh, my God.
To add insult to injury, the police officers then asked him to help carry his dad's body to their pickup truck.
Hmm.
And he mentions that there were plenty of officers on the scene to help pick up the body. Yeah. So your father's now just been electrocuted. You also were electrocuted trying to help him. And now you're being asked to help carry his body. Like, that has got to destroy you.
Yeah, that's terrible.
So from there, the boys were taken to a hospital to be checked out. And they flew home 3 days later to be with their mother.
Ugh.
Following the incident, an inquest was opened and an investigator from an insurance company tried to understand how Martin and his boys were even able to access this area of the dam and why there was even an exposed live wire near the shelter. The company who manages the dam said this was a restricted area and signs were posted advising to people that the area was off limits. However, the area severely lacked any warnings.
Huh.
There was a mention that in some of the video footage from the boys, you couldn't see a sign.
Yeah.
And sure enough, there was only one sign and it was old and covered up by foliage. So it wasn't even visible to Martin and his family. Yeah. You'd have to really look for it. Once inside, they did encounter a knee-high metal chain, but the boys had just assumed that was to block cars from going up the steep access road, not a warning sign.
Yeah, you see that kind of stuff all the time. That's just, yeah, I wouldn't ever think that meant nobody goes this way, just the cars.
Right. And if it was restricted, have a sign on that metal chain that also said, warning, warning.
Yeah.
Not to mention the construction workers at the dam even gave them instructions. And they claim that they passed a security guard who said nothing to them.
Oh, God.
So they encountered people as they were proceeding up this area.
Yeah.
So that doesn't explain the live wire, but it explains how they were able to access this area.
Yeah.
The insurance investigator said there is no doubt that if there had been appropriate signage warning the public not to visit the dam, that Martin Ellis would still be alive today.
Mm.
The reason why the wiring was exposed remained unclear. The St. Lucian authorities failed to provide the inquest with an electrician's investigation into why the pipe was live.
Mm-mm.
And this is super concerning because if it wasn't Martin, at some point it probably was one of the workers at the dam.
Yeah.
Because there's no explanation about why this pipe was a hot pipe, hot pipe from the electricity.
Hmm.
Immediately after Martin's death, the foliage was cut back to show the sign, and a new sign was later installed at the site.
Hmm.
But still,
it's a little too late.
A little too late. I don't really feel like the family probably felt like they got much closure.
I mean, God, yeah, really. Like, that's their dad. That's the mom's husband. Like, he's just gone for no reason, except for that.
Mm.
Nobody said, hey, don't go up there. And no sign said, hey, be careful.
Yeah.
That's horrible.
In the end, Martin's eldest son spoke at the inquest. He said, his dad was an extraordinary man filled with love and kindness. He was a rock to all those around him, providing a limitless well of love and support. He was an amazing father and husband. His death was untimely and unfairly cut short.
Mm.
I would just like to impart how important he was to every single person that he touched. He was the central support to his wife, sons, siblings, and colleagues, and without him, an enormous void has now been created. An example being my mom, Amy, who is severely disabled and now no longer has a carer, a breadwinner, or a loving husband.
That's horrible.
And these boys are young, like 14, 16. And I think at the time of the inquest, the oldest one was about 20.
Yeah. So she's still, you know, has to take care of them. She's disabled. And I bet a lot falls on the 20-year-old. To take care of business.
Now. Yeah, to kind of like step into his dad's shoes.
Oh, that's horrible. And it's horrible that they were just on vacation of somewhere beautiful and relaxing. And you just never think this is going to happen.
The island, which clearly obviously relies on tourism, had already suffered a big blow back in 2012 by the death of Hannah Defoe, who was 20. And apparently she was a cousin of a former England striker. Means nothing to me as a non-soccer player. But Hannah was staying at a resort and received severe electric shocks as she plunged into her hotel pool.
What?
And two relatives and a stranger jumped in the water to help her, but then they also suffered electric shocks and were required hospital treatment afterwards. And because the pool was so full of electricity, they had to leave her body in the pool for like an hour and a half.
We got to get some electricians down to St. Lucia. They need some help. They need somebody to tell them how to fix their electricity problem. This is insane. Like, I don't know. You're like, well, this wouldn't deter me from going. And now I'm kind of like, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, I mean, just don't get in the water.
I mean, okay.
If no one else is in there. Like, don't be the first one in the pool.
What if it's like your own pool, though? What if you have your own little plunge pool?
Well, then we throw a piece of metal in first and watch what happens.
I was going to say throw a hot dog in there, see what happens. I mean, really, though, like, okay, because now all I'm thinking of is in Reunion Island, I'm like, don't go in the ocean. There's sharks. Just stick to the pools. I'm now St. Lucia. I don't go in those pools. It might be electrified. Do we go in the oceans? I don't know. I got to investigate. Does St. Lucia have sharks and a shark problem?
I don't know.
Nothing and nowhere is safe. But we still go, you know? We still go.
I'm still going to go. I feel like the pool being electrified is like super rare.
Yeah. I hope so.
Okay. So don't tell us about a story when you've been electrocuted. That's sad and depressing.
Definitely tell us a story about if you were on a sex raft, though. I am here for those stories.
Or if you've just been on some wild swinger cruise.
Yeah, some yacht orgy. Let's go. I mean, not me, but I want to hear about it.
Yes.
Ugh. I don't like people enough to be on a yacht orgy, so.
I can't. The germs, the smells. The germs,
the sweat, everybody's saliva. Ugh.
Yeah, no thanks. But if you're into that kind of thing, let us know.
Yeah. We're not shaming you about it. We're just not into it, but we want to hear about it.
Yeah.
We like differing opinions. It's fine.
Have you got any travel tips for St. Lucia? Because it's still on my radar.
Yeah. Tell us. And you can tell us at earlydepartures@gmail.com or find us on Instagram at earlydepartures_podcast. And we would definitely like to hear about both of those topics.
Yeah.
We'll be back next Monday, and we hope you'll come back and talk about some more ridiculous things with us. And until then, be safe
and depart on time.